Blades up, little murder puppets. I am Mia Leivicino, West Coast editor here at Letterboxd. And on this momentous episode of the Letterboxd show, I sat down with the director of Saw X, Kevin Greudert, to pick his brain about the long-running horror franchise. Kevin has edited the first five Saw films, directed fan favorite Saw 6 and Saw 3D, and now returns to the electric director's chair for the 10th installment, which is, as of recording, the most critically acclaimed Saw since Lawrence and Adam initially got trapped in that bathroom 19 years ago. But before we dive into our conversation, covering the beauty and brutality of practical gore, which Saw traps we could survive, and whether or not Jigsaw's claims of never having killed anyone are credible, I want to play a game. And because I'm in my Saw X socks, the spirit of Jigsaw has taken over and wants me to play the most torturous game of all with you. Kevin Greudert, what are your four favorite films? The choice is yours.
My four favorite films of all time, no matter the genre?
Any genre.
I'm a big fan of Werner Herzog's film, Aguirre, Wrath of God. I mean, if we're just talking in terms of number of times seen, that one certainly ranks very high. The original Blade Runner, The Wizard of Oz, for sure. And so many to pick from. I really like Night of the Iguana. Is it the greatest film ever made? No, but I just really enjoy it. John Huston's film, Black and White Mexico, really good.
Excellent. That was four. Great choices all. So you've edited the first five Saw films and have directed a few too, Saw 6 and Saw 3D. And not to get too self-indulgent, but this was my 2021 Letterboxd review of Saw 3D. Here we go. The franchise's undeniable box office success demonstrates that it is in fact possible to integrate the new French extremity movement into the hyper-capitalist U.S. film industry, and the result is a radical, chimeric hybrid of populism and fringe interest. Kevin, I have been dying to ask you for 2 years, do you agree with my thesis?
I think so, if I understand you correctly. I do remember... While Darren Bousman and I were editing Saw 2, we went and saw High Tension in the theater. And we're like, whoa. You know, I mean, we'd already shot Saw 2, but it felt like there was a partner across the Atlantic.
Yeah. So you do, are you a fan of the new French extremity movement? Is it an influence at all?
I don't know if it's an influence. I haven't seen that many. I've seen, is it called Ills? Them? I think the translation is Them. Anyways, I'd say my favorite horror film of this millennium is probably Martyrs. So I assume that counts.
Oh, it absolutely counts. That is probably the most messed up movie I've ever seen in my life.
It is. Markers.
It's a little too messed up in a lot of ways, but I'll take it.
Yeah. So I think that both that subgenre and the Saw films both really combine beauty and brutality in a very like primal and specific fashion. I think that fake blood and gore can be really beautiful in a twisted way because, you know, creating those prosthetics and special effects is a very impressive art form, which you've seen firsthand and can speak to, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there might... Have you seen Saw X yet?
Hell yes, I have. Okay. I watched it at 9 a.m.
Not to reveal too much about the film, but there is an effort to find a little bit more artistry in this one than maybe we have in the past. And, you know, so there were some shot choices that I was really, really happy about. So, yeah. And, you know, in the case of Martyrs, it wound up in the end, you know, in the third act, having this very kind of poetic underpinning for all the crazy violence we'd seen throughout. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's what Saw X does, but I liked it. You know, I liked that movie a lot for where it went.
Yes. And so, as I said, I watched this at 9 a.m. in this creepy little Manhattan screening room, and I was most struck by how different this one is from all the previous entries. And I've seen all of them several times. And this one is just so character focused. And it's so much more like patient and slower paced. You know, the editing still gets frenetic during the traps, of course, but it's much more of a controlled chaos. And you edited as well as directed. So I'm curious about this choice to, you know, slow things down a little bit and focus more on character, the character of John Kramer.
Well, yeah, I mean, really, in order to honor Tobin's character as much as we wanted to in this film, we did have to slow it down. And as you know, the whole first act is more getting deep into his shoes. And I tried to really make it feel like a kind of odyssey for him, you know, coming down to Mexico. He's a fish out of water, strange place. You know, he meets these different extreme types of characters along the way. You know, I tried to, even though there's not a lot of the traditional type of Saw set pieces in the first part of the movie, I tried to make it seem like there were new reveals and new environments. And anybody who's seen the trailer kind of knows, well, more than I would like them to know, but that's the nature of marketing a film. The trailer is a masterpiece as far as I'm concerned. But still, you know, when we made it, we had this pipe dream that they were going to be able to market the film without giving away anything. So hopefully that slow pace that the first act has will still work for people, even though they kind of know where it's going. Very little, if anything, from the first act. Well, there is a little bit, but there's very little in the trailer to let the audience know kind of what John is going through in a kind of bigger emotional narrative sense. And, you know, naturally the trailer focuses mostly on the traditional Saw things. So yeah, you're right. I'm hoping that people see it and there are enough qualities to it that will make that will feel very familiar and make them feel like, oh good, Saw is back, but also keep them guessing. And we undercut a few elements of the Saw, you know, mystique and style and the character of John. Again, this is stuff that the trailer has not gotten into, and I'm very excited to see how people react to it.
Yeah. I think something that you're kind of alluding to is the return of the legendary Amanda. Is that part of what you're alluding to?
We're very excited to bring Shawnee back. You know, it's something I do in Saw 6, and it happened, and now here we are.
You brought up Saw 6. I'm sorry, I have to go into Saw 6. That is one of my favorite ones of the whole franchise, and I know that you were behind that one, so thank you very much. Saw 6 is the one that turned me into like a total Jigsaw apologist. I was like, this guy's actually right. You know, he's going after predatory lenders and health insurance grifters. And I just think it's so underrated. It's so fun to see him torture those bad guys. I'll say it. I feel like I prefer to see him go after like abusers and bad guys rather than, you know, like in the first one, he's going after depressed people. I'm like, dude, I can't agree with you on this one, but then in Saw 6, I'm like,
I agree. I mean, there is something to be said for the Saw 1 John Kramer, who is kept, you know, it's very elusive. He's covered in the movie. You don't even know who he is until the end of the film. But you hear the angerness and the bitter. I had hoped in this movie to bring it back some, but the story's not about a super angry guy, the way Saw 1 is. It goes in a different direction, which I think is more refreshing than if I had stuck with this idea of returning to the specific John Kramer one.
No, again, like the character development, it really, really stands out with this one, with Jigsaw, John Kramer, and Amanda. And then you also have this new character, Dr. Cecilia, and I was so, so impressed by Sinove Lund, who plays her. I think she's delivering some of the best acting in the entire series, and I'm curious about how you cast her and how you brought her on.
We had a casting director, Nancy Nair, that was helping us out on this, and I was hoping to find somebody who really was Norwegian, but we cast a somewhat wider net. I think everybody that we considered was at least European, if not Scandinavian. But I was watching Ragnarok, which is a Norwegian Netflix show, and I think originally there was a different actress that pointed me towards that. But then when I saw Sinove, I was like, oh, she's perfect for this. She's really perfect. And, you know, what I really like about her is that, you know, one of our big concerns before we were making the film is we need to make sure that John Kramer, at the very least, still seems like a really smart guy, right? In the past films, he's utterly infallible, right?
Yes.
In this, there's a little bit of fail on his part, but we really, and Tobin in particular was stressing this. We really didn't want it to seem like he was being stupid by getting conned by this woman. And so she had to not only seem incredibly smart, but also very empathetic, right? And be somebody who, you know, you would trust your life with. And we needed somebody who, once you learn a little bit more about what's going on, you totally believe that she's that person as well. And there are even more layers to her character as we get closer to the end of the movie. And yeah, she pulled it off perfectly. Such a great person, you know. I had no idea what she would be like as a person. I hired her based on her acting ability, but she turned out to be an incredible trooper. And just a great presence, you know. She's over 6 feet tall, and you know she's like a foot taller than me. At least it feels that way. But just a really gentle, thoughtful soul.
I mean, everybody in the cast has to be such troopers, I imagine, with all that they go through. And so, what was the environment like at set? Because you have people just like screaming their guts out, but I'm sure it's a little more pleasant than that. What is a Saw set like?
Well, this is the first Saw that is shot entirely on locations. There is no, you know, soundstage to this, because, you know, Saw 6, for example, pretty much everything was either on the soundstage or in the parking lot, right? Whereas this one, we really were out on a hacienda in the countryside, and there were some street scenes, and then the bulk of the movie was shot in an abandoned glass factory in a really gnarly industrial part of Mexico City. No electricity, no plumbing, nothing in this place. And so we spent many, many days and nights in this location, and it wasn't comfortable at all. Like, that's an understatement. It was cold. It was skanky dirty. We cleaned it up as much as we could, but you know, there was only so much you could do. But again, everybody was just an angel. Both the crew and the cast really, really handled it well. One advantage we had for it, even though it wasn't a true soundstage, we were able to cover it on the outside so that we could pretend like it was nighttime. Because if we were shooting all night in that location, there were some times we were there all night, but mostly we were able to do day for night, and that kind of saved our bacon, especially since, you know, Tobin doesn't need to be up all night for weeks on end.
No. We need to protect Tobin at all costs.
Exactly. So I was really glad we were able to make it work out for him that way.
I have a kind of tricky question. Is there a type of Saw trap that you think that you could survive? Because one of my most delusional beliefs is that I could have made it out of the angel trap, where you have to put your hand in the acid or you get pulled apart. I think I could have done it. So is there anything like that for you?
Well, specifically the angel trap, I would take that beaker from the bottom and pour out the acid.
Right?
Just hanging. But that's, you know.
I know, these little loopholes and tricks, yeah.
But I don't know. I have a pretty hard time with blood.
That's so funny.
I think I would pass out in almost any Saw trap situation. I would even start it at all. And, you know, we pretty much have always had the characters at least try, but I think a lot of us, myself included, would just be like, all right, you got me, Jigsaw. Get it over with. You don't even need the timer.
No, I totally agree. And the traps in this one were just especially gnarly. Like, I'm actually, not to brag, but I am pretty good at watching these movies without having to cover my face with my fingers. But with this one, I did have to cover up a couple times. You've really outdone yourself with the gore.
That's great.
And some of them were straight up unfair. I'm not going to spoil, don't worry, I'm not spoiling anything. But I really do feel like some traps are more fair than others.
It's true. I'd say that of this movie, I would rather be in the first than the second, if
yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Even though I'm a pianist, I would rather take the first one. than the second. So yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's hard enough to think of these how to do these traps, make sure they work in the story, make sure they're not just torture, kill things. You know, hopefully there's some kind of metaphorical connection to the sins of the character. But to say they also have to feel equally fair, it's too much. Yeah. It's too much.
No. That's a very hard rule to follow. And speaking of rules, so as mentioned, you've edited so many of these films, and I'm wondering, what are some of the rules for editing a Saw film? Like, what's your kind of Saw Bible, Saw editing Bible?
In a sense, I would go back to Saw 1. James and I talked often about the idea of never be boring, right? And which sounds obvious, but you know, the pace of these films and the flow of new information, of whatever sort, you're meeting new characters, you're meeting new environments, you're meeting new environments in a way that has a very sort of controlled reveal. I think we try harder than the average film to make sure that it moves, right? It's kind of weird when I shoot in a Saw film, but on the other kinds of movies I've directed, a dialogue scene, it'll be like, did we get it? I don't know. It's not like Saw days where you know at the end of the day if you've shot a trap correctly and got it and it's going to work and all that. Whereas when I'm just shooting dialogue, it's like, this might just be boring. Because nobody gets their head cut off. They just talk. And it moved the plot forward, but didn't do anything else. You know what I mean? I'm just, you know, I'm very conscious of moving things along. And I know when I've cut films for other directors, you know, sometimes they'll want to linger on things in a way that I don't necessarily say no or disagree, but I'll always want to consider it, especially if it's a genre movie, you know, where you really want to engage people. Don't assume that they care that you shot a 2-minute scene in one take. You know what I mean? And because the audience doesn't really care that much as if there's not anything new happening. If it's just, oh, we're going down a kind of cool hallway. Well, it's still this hallway. You know, it's 10 seconds later and it's still this hallway. You know what I mean? So the way I shoot a film, I generally am more coverage intensive, if you know what I mean, then
yes,
then people who don't have like deep experience editing, I guess. So, I like to always be able to cut to something, you know, and it's a little bit, you know, attention deficit disorder on my part. But I know Darren Bousman kind of feels the same way. Just keep it moving. Don't let things drag. Unless there's a really specific reason for it.
And I imagine it's almost impossible to do that classic Saw style of editing where it's so quick and frenetic with a dialogue scene. You can't just chop it up like that.
You know, the way I edit, I'll take the footage from the scene and from the first time that I watch it, at the Avid as opposed to, you know, on an iPad on the set or something, I break it into little pieces and sort of build a select reel of every piece that I think I could use. And it's kind of cut the way I feel it would be. You know, it's like when somebody blinks here and they finish this line, but there's a little bit of reaction afterward. Like I just build all the things that I might use in more or less chronological order. And then I, you know, make a copy of that. And then the copy is my first edit of the scene. And it's a huge amount of work to build these selects. It's probably 80% of the work of editing the scene. But then I go through and it's like sketching. Then I just, you know, delete and add and move around. And I feel like it's the best way for me, at least, to feel like I definitely got all the best moments, you know, or if I don't, like sometimes, there'll be some piece of action that an actor does that I really like, but then there's another one that I also really like that are incompatible. And then you have to make some choices there. But I just spend a lot of time really trying to look into the character's eyes and make sure we're doing the right thing.
Well, it's like solving a puzzle, much like
it is. It's like
your own, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm a lousy chess player, but in terms of editing, I feel like I've done the work that every cut that I make, there's a really strong reason behind it, even if it's a very short clip. which usually is sawmill movie.
So for one of our last questions, I do have to ask this because there are so many Letterboxd reviews kind of butting up against the idea, you know, Jigsaw's always saying, I'm not actually a killer. I've technically never killed anybody. And there are a lot of really funny reviews saying like, you are delusional, Jigsaw. But I see both sides because again, I've been a Jigsaw apologist since Saw 6. So I'm just curious about your views. Do you think that Jigsaw is a killer? What do you think, Kevin?
Let's just say that he is prone to self-delusion at times. And I'm trying to be as respectful to Tobin's intentions as I can.
Yes.
Tobin's intentions are the reason we're here today. You know, he's the one that keeps us very true to you know, what we're all about. And you know, it's you'd be surprised how easy it is to stray and think, oh, if we just do this, and you'd be like, no, John Kramer would never do that. He'd never say that. He'd never believe that. And you know, Tobin lives and breathes John Kramer.
Yes. No, we respect. I mean, Tobin is the glue that holds all of it together. And his performance is just so memorable across all of the entries. So, Kevin, I have spent a cumulative 400 hours on the Saw Wiki looking at traps, and I only just recently learned that on set there's a reticence to refer to them as traps. Instead, the preferred terminology is tests or challenges. And I was wondering if you can elaborate on this a little bit so I can adjust my vocabulary so as not to offend Jigsaw.
This is true, and this goes back to what we were just talking about. You will not hear Tobin, unless he slips up, call it a trap. and he would never call a participant a victim. Mm-hmm. They're subjects. He prefers tests and subjects, and I think that's correct. That's John Kramer's way of looking at it. Because, you know, he's not a murderer.
Yes.
Right? And so you're not necessarily going to die because you're in one of these challenges. You're going to be challenged and not murdered. Right? And it's just his way of looking at the world and the way of looking at what he's doing. He would feel very bad if somebody, you know, called him a murderer. Well, we've seen that.
Yes. Yeah. And, yes, and, exactly.
And there's, believe it, as long as this film is, and it is close to 2 hours, the first cut was far longer, and I had to let some things go to bring the length to where it needed to be. But there are some pretty great deleted scenes that will be available, you know, on the and there's a scene where he gets into it with Cecilia that's pretty fun. So.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. We need to release the full tapes. We need like a Lawrence of Arabia length Saw X. Our guest today was Kevin Greudert, director of Saw X, which is in theaters now. Thanks to our crew, production manager Sophie Shin, editorial producer Brian Formo, and Sam for the art. Thanks to Moniker for our theme music, and to you, as always, for listening. Maybe consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts as it helps spread the word about the show. And you can always drop us a line at podcast@letterboxd.com. We love mail. The Letterboxd Show is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.